All right, Alexander, let's do an update as to what is happening in Ukraine. And let's start off with what is going on the front lines. Russia continues to I don't want to say advance. They continue to execute their aggressive attrition, their active defense. And they're doing it very well, and with the help of Sirski, it seems like Sirski is playing right into Russia's hands. What are your thoughts on what is happening on the front?
Well, this is exactly correct. Now, the major battles, the big fighting, is happening in a part of the front lines, basically from Marinka in the south through the area, the Avdiivka area. Of course, Avdiivka is now securely under Russian control, and northwards towards Bakhmut. And the Russians are driving hard, they're pushing forward in all of these places. And we got news this morning that a large village north of, sorry, south of Marinka called Novomikhailovka is apparently bountiful. The Russians have now raised their flag over the central part of this village. It's apparently important because it sits astride various roads and comes close to other roads. And it's another part of the key part of the Ukrainian defense system. And it's gradually being taken by the Russians. Krasnogorovka, which is north of Avdiivka. Apparently, we've had a comment from a Ukrainian soldier. He said the situation there is desperate. The Russians are hammering away. It looks like Krasnogorovka will fall, not immediately, because it's a fairly big place, but probably at some point in the next few weeks, and that will be another big blow for Ukraine. We're getting also lots of reports from the Bakhmut area. Remember Bakhmut? Russians pushing very hard there. Another important fortified village called Ivanivka. Apparently, the Russians are now raising their flags in various parts of Ivanivka. It looks like that village is close to falling as well. And that opens the road westward to Chasiv Yar, which is a town that's just to the west of these places. And beyond Chasiv Yar, if the Russians capture Chasiv Yar, all kinds of other opportunities start to present themselves. But the biggest and most intense fighting continues to be in the Avdiivka area. And if you remember, a couple of days ago, the Russians captured in rapid succession three villages. And that was the first defense line that the Ukrainians established west of Avdiivka. And then the Ukrainians fell back to three other villages, Toninka, Orlovka, and Berdichi. And a couple of days ago, we were getting reports that the Russians had captured all three. What appears to have happened is that the Russians probably did capture most of Toninka, or perhaps all of it, and did capture most and perhaps all of Orlovka. It seems that they never fully captured Berdichi. And what Sirski did was exactly what you said. He sent huge numbers of reinforcements, some of the best troops that Ukraine still has, to try to stop the Russian advance in these three villages. He sort of drew a line and he said, so far, but no further, this is where we stand and fight. And almost certainly he's done that, with Zelensky's urging. And the result is that they've slowed the Russians in Toninka and Orlovka, and especially in Berdichi. But they're being hammered. They are being smashed to pieces. We've had three Abrams tanks now being destroyed in Berdichi itself. We've had these two engineering vehicles being destroyed. We're getting pictures every day now, literally every day, of Ukrainian air defense systems, valuable air defense systems. It was Patriots a short while ago. Now it's S-300s. They're being destroyed one by one by the Russians in this area, as well as Sirski is trying to move air defense assets to try to provide at least some degree of air cover for the Ukrainian soldiers. And the Russian Defense Ministry is reporting every day, specifically in the Avdiivka area, Ukrainian losses at over 400 to 600 men dead or wounded every single day. And everybody knows Ukraine can't withstand this pressure. Apparently yesterday, Russian bombing and artillery strikes right across this area in Avdiivka was on a scale apparently never seen before. And what Syrsky is doing is he's feeding a new meat grinder, just as he did in Bakhmut during the Battle of Bakhmut a year ago, when it was already clear that Bakhmut was about to fall. He just went in sending more and more men into Bakhmut so that Ukrainian losses in Bakhmut became absolutely off the scale. And in the end, Bakhmut fell anyway. And he's doing the same in the Avdiivka area, not for Avdiivka itself, which had already been a stupid thing to do, but to try to hold the Russians in three undefendable villages. It is most bizarre, but I suspect Syrsky's doing this because Zelensky wants him to. And Zelensky's doing it because some people in the West want him to do it also.
I don't understand the thinking. I mean, when this is all over, I hope that we get some sort of insight, some sort of historical context as to why the collective West or Zelensky or Syrsky or Zaluzhny before Syrsky kept on feeding this grinder that you talk about. I mean, you know, it's active defense. Putin has said it's active defense. Shoigu says it's active defense. You call it, you've coined it aggressive attrition. Call it whatever you want. Everyone knows what the Russians are doing here, but they keep on. I just don't understand the thinking that's going on here. Even if it is for media or for PR optics or in order to get more money or whatever, you know, you can't keep on doing this, obviously, but they just fall into this trap over and over and over again.
Yeah, and absolutely. And of course, what makes it even more astonishing is that one does get the sense that we're running now close to the point of exhaustion. I mean, we already have all of these reports about Ukraine running out of ammunition, for example, that they've got no more shells, or that they will run out of ammunition completely by June. And, you know, it's not just us saying that. It's not the Russians saying that. You've got article after article appearing in the media in the West saying that. They're not getting the supplies from the United States that they expected to get. And it's clear that the United States itself is far behind in its attempts to increase shell production. And, in fact, the shell production plan there has been apparently scaled down. So they're not getting the weapons that they need. They're losing air defense assets. I mean, they needed air defense systems to protect their cities. That was on their logistical bases. They're sending them to the front line where the Russians are destroying them. They're claiming to have shot down dozens of Russian aircraft, just as they've previously claimed to have shot down, you know, scores of Russian drones, and especially missiles. I noticed that over the last 72 hours or so, there's been a sea change in opinion about this. A lot of the time, people assumed that the Ukrainians were telling the truth. Now the doubts have settled on that. Most people, I think, who are maintaining an objective understanding of this war are now becoming deeply skeptical that the Ukrainians are shooting down the numbers of Russian aircraft that they claim they are. If they were, it's difficult to understand how the Russians would be able to continue to bomb Ukrainian frontline positions in this intense way, day after day, night after night. So they continue to do this. And as you rightly say, there is something ultimately irrational about it. But it seems compulsive that they have to try and hold their positions as long as they can. And I suspect that a clue, again, is to be found in the latest military update from the British Ministry of Defence. They claim that the Russians have suffered 29,000 casualties in February. Nobody, again, who's observing the situation close up actually believes that. It's not supported by the data that's coming from Mediazona. But I suspect people in Ukraine think this. Some people in Ukraine think this. Some people in London probably think this. Probably some people in Washington also think this. And I think they say to themselves, if we can hold these positions for as long as possible, then the Russians will exhaust themselves. And we will achieve, if not some kind of a victory, at least this elusive stalemate that everybody is talking about. I mean, they said this about Bakhmut. They said this about Severodonetsk, Lysychansk. They're now saying this again about, the Avdiivka fighting. And I'm sure that they're saying this all the time to themselves, even as the facts on the ground tell a completely different story.
They're trapped in their own propaganda. They're trapped in their own fantasy world. And there's no one, there's nothing that can wake them up. Nothing's going to wake them up. A collapse, that's it. An Afghanistan type of collapse is the only thing that's going to wake them up. Until then, Putin bad, Trump bad, Trump bad, Putin bad, Putin stooge, Trump stooge. I mean, this is it. This is it. And the situation is getting from bad to worse in Ukraine. Everyone knows they're losing. Everyone knows the Russians have won, but all of a sudden they're knocking down four Su-34s every single day now. How are they doing it? Don't know. Don't care. But they're doing it because why? Because the Ukraine Ministry of Defense is telling me that they're doing it. And this is it's tragic, and I don't know. It's bizarre. It really, we're in the information age. There hasn't been a war covered in such detail like this conflict. Telegram, Twitter, we've got everything. We've got all the information there. And all these leaders and these decision makers are still stuck on Russia's using shovels.
Yeah, this is absolutely true. I mean,
I don't know.
Some of the best war reporters on both sides, by the way, that we've ever had in any war. I mean, the quality of reporting of this war is outstanding. And it's something, by the way, that ought to be said. We also have increasing comments from Ukrainian soldiers who are becoming more and more desperate. I mean, the soldier in Krasnogorovka I was talking about is saying, that the Russians are hitting constantly and all the time. And, we can't hold them. And of course, people just don't want to see this. As you correctly say, even when the Ukrainians themselves, and there's some very good war reporters on the Ukrainian side, who are also complaining about how disastrous the situation is becoming, you still go to the Ukrainian Defense Ministry, to Sirsky, in other words, to get your views about what is the actual situation on the battlefronts. No, it is astonishing. And as you rightly said, it is tragic. As for Sirsky himself, by the way, he's also busy doing something else, which is that he's sacking every single general in the Ukrainian army or senior commander who he thinks is closer, more aligned to Zaluzhny, and who is also in any conceivable way critical of him. So on top of all the other problems that the Ukrainian army has, they're experiencing an internal purge because, again, both for Sirsky and for Zelensky, the key thing now is to keep the army reliable, to prevent it from, to prevent the soldiers from turning round and marching on Kiev, presumably, and demanding an accounting about the situation there. So that must be causing enormous disruption. And it must also be making soldiers, officers, extremely uncertain about their job and their position. And of course, that will make them even more inclined to hold their positions and not to advance, and not to retreat, rather, and make decisions like that. Because, of course, they're nervous about what might happen to them if they do. So that's where we are.
Yeah, you have guys like Dmitry Yarosh openly criticizing Zelensky. I mean, you know, a guy like Yarosh, when he starts to call for a regime change against Zelensky, you got to take that seriously. Is the plan for them to hold on the front lines to prevent a Russian advance, if the Russians even want to advance? We don't even know if the Russians want to advance, but is their thinking, let's just hold on, and then once we get the $61 billion from the U.S. and the $300 billion from the Russian stolen assets, then we can spin this as we've got a second or third life. We've got another go at this. We have another chance of victory. Is that what they're hoping for?
Yeah, that's exactly what they're thinking. I mean, can I just say, I mean, you know, when people find themselves in a desperate situation, they do tend to have a temptation to clutch at straws, not to recognize how desperate the situation is. If you, as I have done, you know, studied the history of Germany in the last months of the Second World War, you will see that, you know, they were constantly coming up with all kinds of schemes and ideas and telling each other, you know, that if they held out a little longer, the Allies will exhaust themselves, the Russians will exhaust themselves, the Russians and the Allies will quarrel, and, you know, the war will end and we'll be victorious. And they went on saying that right up to the very end, to the fall of Berlin. And they continued to come up with plans and say, you know, Roosevelt's dead, so, you know, things are going to turn out in our favor now, things of that kind. And I suspect an awful lot of that is going on in Kiev at the moment. They're saying to themselves, they're clutching at straws. They say, look, if we hold the Russians back a few more weeks, then Congress will start to provide us with funds. And we'll, at that point, we're going to get the Taurus missiles and the ATACMS missiles and the F-16s. And that's all going to change the situation. Just as the Germans said to themselves, you know, the V-1s and the V-2s changed everything on the battle lines, and the jet fighters that we're putting up in the air. And I think an awful lot of that is going on in Kiev at the moment. They're saying to themselves, let's hold on. What we need to do now, we mustn't give up now. We must hold on. We can do it for a few more weeks and months, and then sometime around the summer, everything will come right. And in the autumn, we're going to get more shells, and we're going to get all these fancy weapons, and we'll be able to go back on the offensive. And the miracle will then take place, and we will emerge victorious. I'm sure an awful lot of that is going on in Kiev at the moment.
Let me ask you a final question, a hypothetical. Let's say everything works out in Ukraine's advantage with regard to they get $61 billion from the U.S., they get $300 billion from the Russian frozen assets, and they get 800,000 shells from Pavel of the Czech Republic as well. Does that make a difference?
Well,
let's say everything goes in their favor now. Yeah. All of a sudden, they get everything they're waiting for and asking for. Does it make a difference?
Yeah, it doesn't make any difference, because it will prolong the war by a few more months, and then once they've exhausted all of that, they will find that they need more, because the Russians will always have more than they do. It's not going to solve their strategic problem. They're just going to find that, as I said, they just burn through all of this material, probably even faster than they expect, and they're back to the same position that they're in today, only worse, because even more of their men will have died, and their army will be reduced in size and even less experienced. And at that point, as I said, they'll be in a worse position, even worse position than they are today.
Whatever happened to the mobilization by the way, Zelensky, the mobilization. Oh,
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's happened to that?
Well, it's the bill hasn't got through the parliament yet, so it's still under discussion. Now, they claimed, by the way, yesterday that they'd mobilized, that they'd found 47,000 recruits since the start of this year, which is possible, by the way. I mean, I don't discount that possibility at all, but we don't know what the quality of these recruits are, probably not very high. And the Russians almost certainly have conscripted more people. Well, the Russians are getting volunteers. They're getting more volunteers every month now than Ukraine is getting conscripts. And the Russian military has a huge lead here because, of course, they were building up their forces all through 2023, and they're still doing so. And bear in mind that the Russians apparently give a year's training to whoever it is they call up. So more and more of these men who joined the army last year are now trained and ready for action. Even if Ukraine undertakes a proper mobilization, there isn't the time to train these soldiers. So that's, by the way, I suspect another reason why we're hearing all these. I mean, the other new, the other straw they're clutching, presumably, is that the West will come in, and that the French and the Germans and the British and even the Americans will send their troops into Ukraine. As I've discussed many times, the French, German and British armies are in no condition to take on the Russians at the moment. And I think this is widely understood. The Americans probably could, at least up to a point, but they would risk World War III by doing that. And I don't think, I'm absolutely sure they won't.
It's time for Zelensky to seriously consider his exit plan. I don't know.
Well, you know, that's the other thing. When people are in these situations, as I said, they get desperate and they clutch at straws. But it's also the case, and, you know, I've encountered many desperate people in my time, in my work. Also, there are also moments of lucidity, and they do realize that all that they're coming up with isn't going to work. And probably I wouldn't be surprised if even as he's clutching at all of these straws, he is still, he's also busy sorting out his exit strategies. If we again go back to Germany. Of course, the leader of Germany and the immediate cadre around him, they couldn't leave. But all the others, even whilst they were determined to keep on fighting, they were already busy many months before the collapse, working out their escape routes. And of course, many of them did escape.
Yeah. All right. We will leave it there. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on Rumble, Odyssey, BitChute, Telegram, Rockfin, and Twitter X. And go to the Duran shop. 15% off all t-shirts. Take care.